This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, we are joined by James Carafano. I read almost everything he puts out there because I love his approach. He's a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. He's a director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies and VP of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for the Institute for International Studies at the Heritage. And I did want to get this in, James, one second, please. The Future of America's Relations with the World, the Three C's Initiative. It was a Polish production, if my memory serves me correct. I watch it. It's about 25 minutes. If you want to see a discussion of connecting the dots of how all of this works from a international perspective, this video really ties it together. I watched it twice. I was so intrigued by what went on there. A lot of very probative questions put forward by the Polish reporter. But you did a great job, James, of tying it together in simplistic terms that people can understand and just pointing out the obvious. And I really appreciated that. And with that, welcome to the show.
Well, and I'm super jealous of you because you live in one of the coolest cities on earth. So every time you call, it just reminds me, like, I don't get to live there.
Well, thank you so much. We enjoy it. For sure. And there's a lot to do this weekend. That's a certainty. So let's start out. We have been talking on this show a lot about this issue. And obviously, Iran decides that they're going to send ballistic missiles into Israel. And everyone is waiting. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has promised a severe response that will make Iran pay a price. And it should. But what is that price? Is that something on the oil infrastructure? There are even those that have talked about going after their nuclear capability. The former Israeli Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, writes that this would be the perfect opportunity to finally wipe out their nuclear program. I guess I'll start with, James, is that even achievable?
Well, first of all, you know, you have to think about this not the way we report it in the press, but the way the Israelis think about this. And although the country's in the Bible, it is not an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's about strategically, how do you best defend the Israeli people? So it's not just about retaliation or retribution. It's about how do we ensure a better security environment for Israel down the road? And so I actually am in the camp that think if they do something, it's going to be later. You know, they hammered Hamas. Now they're working on Hezbollah. I think they're going to want to firmly have the Hezbollah campaign in hand before they react. And then I don't know what they're going to do, but here's what I would look for: is if they do something, and it's in the nature of an interdiction campaign, look at what they target. So one scenario is, go after the command and control, everything that allows the Iranians the ability to run the country. Then you take down the electrical grid. Then you take down the sites that allow to export oil. Then you go after the nuclear sites. That kind of campaign would be an enormously powerful signal that they're telling the Iranian people it's time to take up and take back your country. Or they might choose some other kind of retaliatory strike, but maybe going after oil, maybe you'll go after nuke sites. But here's the thing is what... This is why the Iranians are playing such a dangerous game. The Iranians can shoot a lot of missiles, but they can't accurately target anything very well, which is a big deal. And the Israelis, one, they know where everything is, and they can target it with pinpoint accuracy. And there's not a target in Iran that they can't reach. And Iran has no air defense, no missile defense, and a joke of an air force. So it's like, you taking a swing at Chuck Norris, right? Yep. Not that you're not a healthy guy and you work out in the gym all the time, But you take a smear to Chuck Norris, and then you
it's
wait
appropriate
and see,
in my case, what you're saying. But yeah, so I guess maybe the threshold question maybe should be posed this way. Would the response be a one and done or not?
I don't know, because I don't know what the Israelis are thinking in terms of answering the question. What is the best way we send a signal, not just to Iran, but to all our enemies, what targets to go after? Here's the problem. There is no Iranian attack that probably solves the problem. First of all, Iran and Israel really can't fight a war with each other. There's countries in between that can't attack each other on the ground. They can lob stuff at each other and destroy things, but that's about it. And the Israelis can do enough damage to Iran, and they've done a lot to Hamas, and they'll do more to Hezbollah to kind of push the problem down the road. In other words, to create conditions where it's unlikely that somebody's going to come after them for a couple of years. But the only way you can get to long-term stability in the region is if the United States really, really throws its influence against Iran. I mean, we saw this under Trump. For 4 years, they were completely quiet. And the reason for that was very simple. It's because Trump hammered them into a corner. And so the Israelis don't have that partner in government now. And part of their logic or thinking may be, well, let's wait and see what happens in November and see what kind of American partner we have in the future. Because without a strong of American partner, just through military retaliation, they really can't create the long-term conditions for security.
Do you believe that this moment right now, and where Israel, if they take that wait and see, that this is really an opportunity for the U.S. to kind of re-engineer their diplomatic approach to Iran? You've written a number of times that this has almost been like a continuation timeline of the Democrats, with Obama and now Biden, of doing this same incrementalism, just a little more kind of approach, right, as opposed to what you call escalation dominance.
Right.
And one example of that would be just to cut off their oil exports and make them hurt financially, where they can't finance any of this proxy, stuff that's going on.
Well, the answer is, look, we know that we're going to have two very different responses depending on who wins the election. I mean, that's not a Republican or a Democrat speaking. That's just, we just all know that, right? If Trump comes in, he is going to be a security partner for Israel, and he is going to hammer the Iranians into a very small box. If it's a Harris administration, she's going to struggle to continue the current strategy of engaging with Iran, even though Iran spits in our face every time we do that. So, the Israelis know what to expect, but they don't know who's going to win the election. The other thing I'll say is, this is something we don't really talk about a lot because we all fixate on the nuclear thing, but that is not the end of the Iranian threat. Even if when the Iranians field a nuclear weapon, nuclear weapons are really only good for one thing: to prevent nuclear war with another country. The Israelis have nuclear weapons, and they've always chosen not to use them. So Iran really doesn't need a nuclear weapon to deter nuclear war, because nobody's going to start one with Iran. And look, Russia's got tons of nuclear weapons. Ukraine invaded their territory. What did they do? Nothing. We fought a surrogate of the Russians during the Cold War in Vietnam. We never used our nuclear weapons. They never used their nuclear weapons. We fought it in Korea. So nuclear weapons actually have a very little limited utility. So, if the Israelis bombed some nuclear sites, would that be a deep humiliation to the Iranians? Yep. Does it end the threat of Iran to Israel's survival in any way? Nope.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But we you know, what's reported in the media and what's talked about by some of the talking heads, whether folks out of Congress, the administration, or otherwise, we always point to, you know, the nuclear capability.
Right.
As though it is an eventuality. You know, if we stick our toe in the water, that's where we actually are headed. I agree with the position that you have, and y'all talk about that in the future of America's relationship with the world, where there were some very interesting observations that you made about there's the practicality of how that work, of how that would work, is that it doesn't work.
And, right.
You know, you never hear that from folks, you know, so it's more of an excuse to not really do other things that we ought to be doing in order to achieve this escalation dominance that you talk about, right?
That's exactly right. The two things are absolutely true. One is Iran's decision to get a nuclear weapon is not a technical decision. It's not like there's some conveyor belt there. And, you know, if you do something, the conveyor belt slows down. If you don't, Iran could be a breakout nuclear power anytime it wants. There's everything it needs to be a breakout nuclear power. It's a political decision. And what will deter Iran from making that political decision, which they could actually be extremely close to making, is what's in the best interest of Iran? Because you can only declare a nuclear breakout once, right?
Yeah.
And then you're kind of done. And so the question is what will deter Iran from becoming a nuclear breakout state is not something you physically do. It's creating fear in the Iranians that the risk of breaking out is far greater than the benefits of breaking out. It's just that simple. And here's the other thing I'll tell you. If Iran does declare themselves a nuclear breakout state, and we always say this is unthinkable, this is unimaginable, this is unpermissible, what are we going to do? And the answer is we're going to do nothing. We're not going to invade Iran. You know, we're not going to bomb Iran. We're just going to say, well, that's intolerable, right? And so what we'd be focusing on is that what we're going to do the day after they declare themselves a nuclear power. What do you do a day before to convince them that they really should not do that? And you know what this administration is doing? Nothing. They're doing nothing to prevent the day of decision. And they have no prep for doing a day after. To me, the right scenario for the Iran, I think shooting 1,000 missiles at Israel is stupid. The right decision for them would have been declare yourself a nuclear breakout power now. But Biden's not going to do anything. Harris is in the middle of the election. She's not going to want to do anything. If you declare it now, even if Trump wins, it'll be 3 months before he gets in office. What's he going to do? It's already done. So that would have been the smart play for the Iranians. And then, you know, but the thing is, we've seen this before. You know, we saw it with Pakistan and India, that, you know, there's this kind of initial empowerment. Oh, look at me, I'm a nuclear power and I can threaten people. But then you realize you really can't threaten. The only thing you can threaten is if somebody shoots a nuke at you, you'll shoot back. That's the only thing that's credible. Everything else is just bluster. And this is like, look, this is from the first day nuclear weapons. We tried this.
Yeah,
in the early
exactly.
1940s, we tried threatening the Russians with nuclear attack. And what did they do? They just went out and built nuclear weapons.
Is there an opportunity for us right now? I just don't feel like we're exploiting this, because there's a lot of civil unrest within the confines or the border of Iran right now. And
well, they're in a delicate
position. And it would seem to me, I mean, if I were sitting in the White House, I would be probing every day as to what can we do to take advantage of that leverage.
Well, that's a great question, because what we've seen is when the Iranians are, the regime is threatened, that's when they actually get very conservative and they're the least troubling. And so if you're threatening them from it, within and without, they're doubly conservative. Even under the height of the Trump's maximum pressure campaign, they never really supported an opposition. And the external opposition, the diaspora, they're completely useless and have no credibility, and they're a joke, really. So ignore all them. But internal to Iran, the regime is deeply hated. And the one thing we never did under Trump, under maximum pressure, is we never demonstrated support for the real strong support for the human rights issues and for the internal opposition. And if we fed that flame, it would, I'm not saying they could overthrow the government, but I think we could put an enormous amount of pressure on the regime. It's the one thing I would look for. If you're looking for what's the difference between maximum pressure Trump and maximum pressure Trump 2.0, it's what do they do about support for the internal regime? Because there are many advisors in the Trump world that say, look, now is the time to really start to send a signal to the people internal to Iran that we are with you. And, you know, of course, every time they rose up, whether it was the Green Revolution or these other, whether it was Obama or Biden, people just stood there and blinked and did nothing, right? We ignore the human rights issues. We ignore what's going on.
Well, we embraced appeasement even more.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, we started pushing the JCPOA even more aggressively at that point in time.
That's,
my memory serves me correct.
Yeah, that's a wrinkle I would look for from a Trump 2.0 administration.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Thank you so much for joining us, James Carafano, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. We really appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great weekend. All righty, folks, we will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.